Tax Update for April the 27th, 2007. This is Tax Update for April the 27th, 2007. This week, home is not where the heart is. Travel deductions for taxpayers without a permanent place of business. The Tax Update podcast is intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners are expected to do their own research to confirm items raised in this presentation before relying upon the positions presented. The podcast and the document may be reproduced freely so long as no fee is charged for the use of the document or the audio podcast. Such prohibited use would include using this podcast or document as part of a CPE presentation for which a fee is charged. The podcast is sponsored by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. Lineberg Information Services offers email newsletters on tax-related matters, as well as access to a library of useful information to tax practitioners that subscribe to their services. Again, you can find them on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. This week, we're going to take a look at a pair of cases from two taxpayers named Ayala, whom it's not clear from the opinion necessarily that they are related, but it would appear they very likely may be when you look at the facts of two cases, that decided the issue of whether they'd be allowed a deduction for travel away from home under Section 162A2. The cases are Jason Ayala versus Commissioner, TC Summary 2007-59, and Manuel Ayala Jr. versus Commissioner, TC Summary Opinion 2007-60, both of which were decided April 23rd. The taxpayers in question both worked for a pipeline company and spent most of their time on the road because the pipeline company was basically doing projects in different locations, and as that project was completed, they would work in one location. When that project finished up, they'd be transferred to another location, work there for a while, then keep going from place to place. Each of them claimed travel expenses on their personal income tax returns for the expenses they incurred while on the road. And the key question that was going to be decided was, did each taxpayer have a tax home that could be used for purposes of calculating a deduction for travel expenses to be away from? The court decided no, but we're going to look at the reasons why the court made that decision in this case and how they applied the law to the Ayala case. Now, before we get started, it's important to understand that this particular issue we're discussing applies only to a taxpayer who has no principal place of business. The general rule is if you have a principal place of business, that is your tax home. But in this case, they work from project to project to project, and these projects were all in different locations, so the taxpayer had no permanent place of business. The place of business changed all the time because the projects were moving all over the country. So the taxpayers were looking at getting a deduction for their travel expenses, which were considerable. Under the issue of did they have a tax home under a secondary test for a taxpayer without a principal place of business. Now, the general rule for travel deductions is found under Section 162A2, and that provides that, in general, there's going to be allowed deduction for traveling expenses, including amounts expended for meals and lodging, other than amounts which are lavish or extravagant under the circumstances, and no one is alleging that either of these individuals were doing lavish or extravagant spending, while away from home in the pursuit of a trade or business. The key question to be decided here is whether they can meet the while away from home test, and by definition that requires we have a home. So now we have to look at where is home so we can determine when they're away from it. Now, Revenue Ruling 73-529, the IRS outlines a test that would be used for determining a taxpayer's home when they have a trade or business that there is no regular or principal place of business. So, as the revenue ruling notes, the fact that the taxpayer is in a trade or business that has no principal place doesn't preclude them from having a tax home for traveling expense deductions, but moves the inquiry from whether there is a basically a regular, whether there is a, whether we're testing, whether it has a home in the form of a regular place of abode in a real substantial sense, or whether he's an itinerant. If a taxpayer is treated as having a real home out there, then we'll get a deduction for our travel away from it because that will become our tax home location for purposes of this deduction. However, if we are considered an itinerant, that is having no fixed home, then there is no deduction allowed for the travel expense whatsoever. The ruling goes on to note that although such an inquiry is basically a subjective, there are three objective factors that may be used to determine with respect to the taxable year in question the bona fide nature of a taxpayer's assertion that his claimed abode is his regular place of abode in a real substantial sense. The three-level tests work like this. Number one, whether the taxpayer performs a portion of his business in the vicinity of the claimed abode and uses such abode for purposes of his lodging while performing business there. That is the first test. We'll start with this point. In the Ayala case, the first test is not met. They did not do, or certainly the case never held, that they did substantial pipeline work in the area around their claimed abode. Number two, whether the taxpayer's living expenses occurred at his claimed abode are duplicated because his business requires him to be away therefrom. Number two is going to be the key issue of inquiry because the question was, did the taxpayers pass that test? The third test is whether the taxpayer has not abandoned the vicinity in which his historical place of lodging and his claimed abode are both located, or has a member of his family, marital or lineal only, currently residing at his claimed abode, or uses his claimed abode frequently for purposes of his lodging. In the particular case of each of the Ayalas, we are going to find that they tend to meet the third test because they do basically use this place of abode frequently. It is the one regular place they tended to return to, and it certainly does not appear they had abandoned that location as a place of living. Now, the IRS goes on to note that while there is a subjective test, the basic way they try to convert to an objective test is say that a taxpayer who passes two of these three tests has a place of abode that counts and is substantial, and a taxpayer who does not pass two of these three tests does not have one. Now, while CCH in their tax research service cites a single case way back in 1944 that held for a taxpayer that met none of these tests, they go on to note that the cases since then have generally all used this 2 out of 3 test, and if a taxpayer fails 2 out of these 3 tests, the taxpayer who has no regular place of business will be considered not to have a tax home. And that probably is the safe way to deal with your taxpayers if you're dealing with a situation. So our key question is going to look at this 2 of 3 test. And in the Ayala case, the issue will boil down to, do we have duplicated expenses being incurred? Now, in the cases at hand, we have employees of a pipeline construction company who travel around the country for various pipeline projects. One of the two taxpayers was a truck driver who delivered materials to these projects, and that taxpayer would live basically from various locations. He would hopefully, we would point out, try to rent space on a weekly basis because that was generally cheaper at these locations. But he would basically have temporary locations from point to point, get a temporary place to stay, and pay for however many weeks he needed to, and then move on to the next location. The other taxpayer involved was a project safety coordinator for the various projects. He actually had a travel trailer that he and his wife traveled in and went from location to location setting up shop as he was transferred. Again, as a project finished, he would be sent on to the next project. Now, the taxpayers each had family that lived in Vallejo, California, and would from time to time stay at or near in or near that home in Vallejo. Jason actually stayed at the home in Vallejo that's referenced in his case from time to time when he was not on the road. So if he wasn't traveling or didn't have an assignment, he would go back to Vallejo and he would stay there. Manuel, which is the second case, and his wife had a travel trailer they used on the road. When back in California, Manuel would often stay in the home while his wife stayed in the travel trailer and took care of the various pets. Manuel had a special case as the reason why he was staying in the home. Manuel's disabled sister was actually living in the family home, which had been purchased by their parents in the 50s. And although the various siblings owned the home, she stayed there, paid most of the expenses. But Manuel would go back and assist her and would also assist her financially to enable her to stay in that particular home. They were working to try to keep the sister in that home. Now, Jason did not pay any rent to stay in the family home. He didn't pay any money towards the family home for rent or upkeep, neither while he was there nor while he was on the road. And while he contributed money towards foods and household expense while he stayed at the Vallejo residence, he did not have any regular continuing expenses beyond those he incurred while in Vallejo for the family. He did, however, use the Vallejo residence to store many of his possessions out of convenience, since he really had no other permanent place to store things. So he would use the Vallejo home, his possessions were located there, and whenever he didn't have a job, whenever he didn't have a current assignment or whenever he had time off, he would go back to Vallejo and stay there with the family. Manuel did provide financial assistance to his disabled sister who lived in the Vallejo home. He would sometimes pay various bills for her and also paid property taxes from time to time in order to keep his sister from getting into trouble or having the house have a potential lien on it, so when she ran into financial difficulty, Manuel would basically pony up and send money in to, you know, keep things running and keep his sister in the home, which is what they were trying to do. Now, Manuel and his siblings, as we noted, did own the home, but the disabled sister was the only person who stayed there full time. Now, the tax court in these facts had to decide if either Jason or Manuel had a tax home that would allow a deduction under Section 162A2 for travel expenses while away from home, or whether they were itinerant workers, as Revenue Ruling 73-529 would hold, with no deduction allowed for travel expenses. Now, the court starts with a basic analysis, and the tax court noted that generally an individual tax home is where his principal place of employment is. For instance, my office, where I generally go and work from for day-to-day for my firm, is located in Phoenix. My tax home is in Phoenix, and that would be true even if I maintained my principal residence, let's say, in Flagstaff or Tucson, and basically had hotel space in Phoenix during the week when I was working here or during the week when working. My tax home would still become, would be Phoenix, because that is my principal place of employment. And my travel to somewhere else would simply be commuting, therefore, so I wouldn't be away from home in Phoenix because Phoenix is my principal place of employment. But in this particular case, neither Jason nor Manuel had a principal place of employment. The pipeline projects went on where they went on. It would move from place to place. And as probably seems to make sense when you think about it, the pipeline projects, once it was done, we really didn't need to stay there and do another one. We needed to move on to the next place we were going to lay pipe. So therefore, they quite often traveled from place to place. There simply was no, you know, basically they were out there in the world putting pipe down, and the pipe had to go where it had to go, and we went to the next place to deal with it. In that case, they said, basically, when they have no permanent place of business, a taxpayer who has can treat a permanent place of residence at which the taxpayer incurs substantial expenses as his or her tax home. And in this court, of course, the tax court cites Weitkamp versus Commissioner 29 TC 16 and 21. However, if the taxpayer has neither a principal place of business nor a permanent residence, there is no deduction allowed because he or she lacks a home from which to be away from, as required by Section 162A2. The court goes on to point out that while the subjective intent of the taxpayers can be considered for purposes of determining if they have a tax home, the courts focus on more on objective criteria. What the court recites here essentially is a restatement of what the revenue ruling cited above tells us, that we have to look to objective criteria to make the sense. In this case, it does appear clear that each of these taxpayers would have asked, if you asked them where they lived, where their home was, both would have said Vallejo, if for no other reason than it was the one place they tend to go back to on a regular basis. But that by itself was not enough. A key point of the analysis is whether the taxpayer actually incurred both the cost of maintaining a residence and the cost of travel on the road. The court spends a lot of time discussing the fact that the point of 162A2 was to relieve taxpayers who faced the burden of paying duplicated expenses because of their travel. They were both maintaining a principal residence, plus because of the demands of travel in their occupation, were forced to pay for things a second time. Remember, we have the general rule that disallows personal expenses under Section 262. We are not allowed a deduction for personal living expenses. 162A2 serves as an exception to that general rule that we cannot get a deduction for personal living expenses. And in this case, we're allowed the deduction for the personal and living expenses of the travel and the meals on the road, because the court's theory is of the need to duplicate the expenses. And that, in fact, that was the reason why Section 162 required the while away from home criterion. The court reasoned that the purpose of Congress in having that criteria in 162A2, which it clearly is there, was to make up for duplicated expenses, and that's what the tax court is going to use to determine if we have a true tax home. As we should note, the tax court views Section 162A2 as granting an exception to 262. Therefore, because it is an exception and basically a deduction, we interpret the exception narrowly, not broadly, and that's what the court's looking to do. Now we take a look at the two fact patterns. In Jason's case, the court pointed out that he incurred no expenses in maintaining a home, certainly no duplicative expenses. He only had expenses related to Vallejo when he was in Vallejo and not incurring expenses for his road travel. He did contribute to the upkeep of the house. He contributed to the expenses of the house, paid for food, paid for others' expenses, but only while he was there, and that means only for the time period when he was not incurring expenses related to travel. When he was on the road traveling, he incurred no expenses related to the Vallejo residence. Therefore, while the court recognized that Jason may have had substantial expenses, because it is rather expensive to live on the road, the fact that the expenses were not duplicated eliminated the right to any deduction. He merely had high Section 262 expenses. He did not have deductible Section 162 expenses. Now, Manuel's case on its initial look, appears to be a stronger one. But in the end, the court decided he also failed to incur duplicative expenses, at least duplicative expenses of his home. He did not pay mortgage payments or pay for utilities back in Vallejo, and the payments that he did make when he was away from Vallejo were not really to maintain his home, but were basically for the benefit of his sister. The court found that basically they were not duplicative because he wasn't maintaining his own home, he was maintaining his sister's home. While the court noted that Manuel's financial support of his sister was very laudable and should be commended, it did not serve to create a tax home. Rather, it simply served to keep his sister in the home, and he made some use of the home when he got there. But, as should be clear, it seemed like most of the activity that Manuel had with the home existed primarily to enable his sister to live there, not primarily to give him a place to live. While the court did not directly address the revenue ruling 73529 factors, indirectly it kind of made clear as making use of those provisions. We don't really even have to discuss the fact that the taxpayers failed the first test, where we were talking about performing a substantial amount of work in the area in which the abode was located, or if they passed the third, that they were still continually using the Vallejo residence and would come back to it and certainly did not appear to abandon Vallejo. So the real question to be decided was whether there were duplicated living expenses being incurred because of their travel. Now again, remember, these particular tests for duplicative living expenses only apply if a taxpayer has no principal place of business. Again, with my fact pattern and the Phoenix location, even if I didn't meet any of these tests for a place for a residence, it wouldn't matter because my tax home would still be Phoenix and travel away from Phoenix would still be deductible. That is an account of business. Now, the IRS, while they got a hands-down win on that, wasn't satisfied with just assessing the tax. The IRS asserted that the Ayalas were guilty of negligence, that they owed the 20% negligence penalty under Section 6662A in both cases. In both cases, the tax court turned down the IRS's position in this area. The court gave a lot of weight to what it indicated was the positive impression it got of each of the taxpayers when they testified. The court felt that the taxpayers were honest individuals actually making a good faith and reasonable attempt to comply with the tax laws. We had a complex area of law with a, kind of a subtle distinction that would be lost on many individuals as to why there is no travel deduction here, but there would be in other cases. And that the taxpayers certainly didn't appear to be, as often causes the problem when we see somebody get the book thrown at them in tax court for penalties, trying to either pull a fast one or attempting to remain intentionally ignorant or believing what's something that's too good to be true because they want to believe it, that neither of these appeared to be the motivation behind the Ayalas, either Ayala, taking a deduction for their travel. Rather, they both were trying reasonably to comply with the tax laws and reasonably were trying to create a proper return. The fact that they got it wrong was not enough by itself to cause the negligence penalty to be imposed. And in fact, you would presume the tax court came to the conclusion, which makes sense to me, that imposing the penalty in this case would even be counterproductive. If, in fact, taxpayers who make a reasonable effort to comply with the law and who actually go out there and try to do the right thing are penalized for trying to get it right, then maybe the best approach is to play the audit lottery. In essence, if I'm going to be penalized because I can't get this complex stuff right, I'm going to be penalized because I didn't understand enough to be able to get that far, and, you know, I took a position that appeared reasonable on its face and certainly would appear reasonable to anybody that didn't have a deep understanding of the code. If I'm going to be penalized for making good faith efforts, then maybe I just stop making good faith efforts and I just see if the audit lottery wins, because obviously if I get examined, I'm going to be nailed no matter what. So the tax court, I think, came to a reasonable conclusion here that the IRS was being way overreaching by attempting to go for negligence penalties in this case. That simply should never have been on the table and was not an issue to be decided in this case. Now, this has been this week's little tax court discussion and tax court issues, and we've taken a look at where we stand in this particular case. Now, key things to remember. You do have to counsel your clients who may be in this position about the issue of duplicative expenses and that they need to truly maintain a residence in the place that they're going to call home. It probably won't work, as was the attempt in this case, to borrow a general family home or to try to take advantage of a home that is being used by others in the family. There is a key requirement that you're going to have to, essentially, incur substantial expenses unless you both have not abandoned the residence and you're doing substantial work in the area. So if, in fact, they had been doing substantial pipelaying work in the Vallejo area on a regular basis and they kept coming back there, then it appears they would have gotten the deduction. But having failed that, and in most cases, if you're a worker who's on the road like this, you're going to fail that, because if there was regular work all the time back in the main location that you consider to be home, you'd probably spend most of your time there and clearly just have a principal place of business in that area. Since that doesn't appear to be what was available to them, they needed to meet the expense criterion, and they failed. As well, the fact that the Ayalas both got out of the negligence penalties indicates the importance of essentially being honest and earnest. Penalty resolution in the tax court quite often depends on whether the court believes the taxpayers were making honest efforts or whether somebody was trying to get by with something or was being intentionally ignorant of the tax law. The court doesn't like either one of those. They do like people who appear to be making a reasonable good faith effort. Your client's believability is going to be a key issue in sustaining or losing the case on penalties. So it is important to say, does your client pass the grin test? Can we reasonably say they believe this was legitimate and that they realistically couldn't have been expected to question it? Or do we sit there and begin snickering? If we begin snickering when we talk about that, you probably have penalties. This has been the tax update for April the 27th, 2007. The tax update is brought to you by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.lineburgservices.com. You can visit them there to read their updates on various tax items of interest to tax professionals. Again, visit them on the web at www.lineburgservices.com and consider subscribing to their services. This has been the tax update.